This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, what do you call it, Kramer?
The billiard room.
No.
The name.
The billiard. Not billiard. What? Not the billiards. It was... Come on, Rudy. What? Come on. We call it the
place to
be. The place to be. Yes, it's the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
This is the place to be here tonight.
Time to play the game.
Party people in the place to be. Uh-huh. It's about that time.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
I think they might hit a shock wall.
Actually, it's being John Akiyama is a better version of it.
What do you think, Woodling? You can finally tell Grant Owens you found new music.
I'll tell you what, I am impressed. Mm-hmm.
Sharon Lawson Bram, skidamarinky-dinky-dink.
Yeah.
Skidamarinky-doo.
Hey, Nate, man, this is pretty much a highlight of my life right now. I had no idea you were going to be here. I wanted to drive that freaking ho train of my whole youth. You're the man.
And I thought he meant Nate Milton, the Godfather from Kings of Sport. Do you really think that's the Godfather?
Yeah, I did.
All you have to do is break out that fuck money.
I hate the pots. Watch your mouth, you scratch your teeth.
That's a bit much. You who murdered the dog with the sword, and I'm being a little too much.
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. I was just curious. 5 years! 5 years! We've been doing podcasts, and we have this. This is trash.
To do worse than Josh Richard.
Because the free wind is blowing through your head. Surround your daylight there. Seasons crying, no despair. Alligator lizards in the air. In the air.
Place to Be Nation. Welcome to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero. We're going to meet you live here on this 4th of July Monday evening, and of course, as you heard in the open, we're paying tribute to both Yacht Rock and America with our music here tonight. And Scott Criscola, hope you had a wonderful Independence Day weekend celebration.
I did, sir. Good evening, JR. Good evening, Place Be Nation, and happy 4th of July, episode 412 of The Mothership. And it was a wonderful 4th of July weekend for both of us. We had some great weather. Mm-hmm. It was beautiful here in the Northeast. Some storms raging coming in as we speak, but the weekend is in essence over, so it doesn't matter anyway.
I'm sure if everyone out there may hear fireworks during this recording, because it's the 4th when this guy across the street decides to light them off right directly outside my house.
So. Decides to go to Baghdad? Or
yeah, right. I mean, you know, usually right in front of my house, so that's what we did last year. So we'll see. We'll see if he keeps it up this year, the tradition. So you might be hearing them as they...
That's okay, because there might be out here lightning and thunder in my end, so it might have noise all around. But
quite the show, quite the show. Yes. Yeah, it was good. I got to see Mr. D'Amato. It's becoming a weekly thing now, I guess.
Yes, so, I saw that, yeah.
See him in a couple more weeks, but...
Mr. Morissette had a nice little shindig yesterday, Cowboy.
Yeah, I got to see my long-lost friend, Andrew Flanagan, so that was fun. It's the last time I see him now is at events that Roger hosts.
I know. How about that for serendipitous?
I don't see you otherwise, but...
That's
actually, I'll see him this week at basketball. So yeah, it was good to see him. How about you? Mm-hmm. You any parades or convalescent homes that you visited this weekend?
Nope. Nights free. No, it was a good weekend. So Saturday, actually saw a lot of baseball and a lot of fireworks. Saturday, Independent League, New Britain Bees, a little bit upstate with fireworks. And then yesterday hung out in Brooklyn, went to the Brooklyn Cyclones, which is the Mets single A farm, and they had fireworks as well. So it was a good time. A lot of fireworks. And good weather, and took advantage of it. And then today, hung out with one of the doctors of my college pals at his parents' house, a little swimming, some cookouts. It was nice. It was a good weekend. Hmm. Enjoyed it very much. Saw Cowboy was at the Sox game.
Yeah. So, didn't even have to throw him again in the closet after.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Nah. Yeah, he's not 0-40 anymore, Mushhead. But we're back in the we're back in the big steel box, PIC. And we're hitting that sweet spot, if you will, of the middle of 2006.
Hey, what is going on here?
I don't know, but you're moving out. You're done till September. You don't live here. And there's no summer school. I don't think Slater's coming in to up his grades so he can play
driving in his Cadillac.
Tonight, inside, of course, the Vintage Vault, JR, we bring you, very fitting, actually. I love when we get...
The timing, yes. Amazing.
I know, I love when we do this. I love when this happens.
This stuff is never planned, by the way.
I know.
We planned on the schedule, kind of months ago, but, you know, we have starts and stops, different days, and...
Yep.
Just shook out. Here we are.
Here we are. The 2006 Great American Bash. Yeah, baby. Yeah.
And I was always very proud of the, if you go back to our old message board, obviously we're doing the Vintage Vault refreshes now, but back in the day we actually did Vintage Vault reviews. This is what we're basing them on.
Right.
And, we always used to give little subtitles to them. And this was one of my favorite ones because, you know, within the subcontext of the show, liver or leave her. So I thought that was one of our more clever ones. But anyway.
Yes, I enjoyed it. No, that was a good one. One of your best ones. Oh, speaking of, you know what else was today? Did you watch it? I know it was on tape delay. You did
watch it? No, I did not. Do not spoil it. I have it ready to go. I already even...
I just wanted to say... I didn't say... No, I just wanted to make sure.
I don't even want to talk about it.
Okay.
I didn't DVR because I don't have cable anymore, but the Watch ESPN app does have it archived. So
yes.
I will be watching it. I have my... I already started my notes for PlaceNation.com. My good. Fourth... is it fourth? I think I started in 13 with this.
13,
thing, right?
14, 15. Yeah, this will be your fourth.
So there you go. So be sure to check that out, hopefully this week.
I was there, of course, last night, and I saw the stage being built for you.
Did you have hot
night.
Dogs? Yeah. But the only thing you didn't eat on that little voyage.
No, yeah. I did not have a Nathan's dog, but I will come back for Nathan's dog.
How was that? What happened to this pizza guy? I've read the, I went down your page looking for info, and I found that, he got murdered in fucking Orlando or something?
No, not Orlando. No, it seems like every murder's in Orlando. No, his name was Barbati, Lou Barbati, who the family owned. For those that follow me on Facebook and Place Me Nation, there's a big pizza place in Brooklyn, L&B Spumoni Gardens, one of the most well-known pizza joints in all of the five boroughs. And, I got some fireworks here, too. Earlier in the week, he was coming home. He lived in the Diker Heights section of Brooklyn. And he was getting out of his car, and he got shot five times on his back stoop. Now, he was carrying $10,000 in cash.
Is he Dino Bravo's associate?
Yeah, I was about to say. No, he wasn't carrying any cartons of Parliaments. But and apparently his wife said that he does bring that much money home a few times a year. So there's rumors that it was an inside job.
It had to be.
It had to be.
No one just gets gunned down on their back porch with 10 grand in their pocket.
With 10 grand and not take the money.
Right.
Which means somebody panicked. So last night when we got back from the Cyclones game and we were outside having a couple slices, we're seeing – D'Amato would have loved this. We're seeing people come – because it's a two-day wake. There was a wake yesterday and a wake today, and I think the funeral's tomorrow. The place actually closed tomorrow. And we're seeing guys come in, and I mean, it's got – you're talking, you know, this has Goodfellas written all over it. You got guys looking like Frankie Carbone and Jimmy Two Times, and we're looking, and you could – there's a group of three guys as we're walking out ready to go home, and they're chatting, and they're, you know, they got little crib sheets, and Dr. G looks at me and goes, you know what they're talking about. I'm like, oh, yeah, that guy that robbed him, he'll never see the light of day again. There's no doubt about that. So, that was the whole story. So – It was very – usually it's very – it's happened. I mean, that place is open till like 2 in the morning, and people are buying pizza that late. It's not just the Spumoni and the lemon ices and the ice cream section. People buy pizza that late. It was very, very quiet, very subdued. They had signs up. You know, I think his nickname was Lulu. So they were like, you know, it was very weird last night. But that's the story. So it was definitely an inside job, and we're pretty much assuming that within a month that guy will probably be found in a – dumpster in the Rockaways.
Bless America, you know? That's the American
exactly.
dream right there.
It is. I'm sure that guy will be found in a dumpster in the Rockaway soon. So,
couple of haters.
So, anyway.
Was it Lulu Massimini?
Lulu Massimini. Yeah, you know who did the deal? Number five. That's why he screwed it up. Five sucks. All right. Great American Bash. And here we go, the third one of the WWE brand.
Mm-hmm.
And another show, and I feel like we say this a lot, JR, throughout 2006, another show that you probably don't remember that well. Might need to watch it again. Your opinion of it varies depending on what you thought of SmackDown at the time. So here we go. July 23rd, 2006, live from the Conseco Fieldhouse in Indianapolis, Indiana. Now, JR, you'll be giving us the skinny on the venue shortly because this is the first WWE pay-per-view in this building. But This is not the first wrestling pay-per-view in this building. Do you know what pay-per-view was in this building prior to this show?
I'm looking at it, so yeah.
Son of a bitch. It was, of course, WCW Sin.
There you go.
Was in this building in January, right? January 2000. I always get Sin and Greed mixed up. Sin is January, Greed was March. Okay.
So amazing enough. I mean, there's been nothing. God, dude, he never had a pay-per-view all this time, and Sin had been there in 01.
Yeah. This is Indiana's third pay-per-view. Of course, the first one was WrestleMania 8. That was at the Hoosier Dome. And then In Your House, Buried Alive in October of 96 was at the old Market Square Arena, mm-hmm. where the Pacers used to play. But this is a new venue, JR, so give us the scoop.
Sin. Opened November 6, 99, so fairly new when Sin made its way there.
Yep.
Cost $183 million. That'd be $200. Who goes in and updates the dollars every year? Like, I know. $260 million in 2016 dollars.
I know.
So, does someone go to every arena page and update what the cost would be? You know, some like, algorithm or logarithm that automatically updates it? You know,
I know.
Fink, Roberts, and Petrie, the structural engineers. Mm-hmm. So tenants are the Indiana Pacers, of course, the Indiana Fever, the WNBA,
yep.
the Indiana Firebirds of the AFL, played there for 3 years, and the Indiana Ice of the USHL played there for 2 years as well. Mm. Paul McCartney played there in 2013.
Yes. Okay. Your attendance, 9,750. Actually, that's not bad. Secondary pay-per-view, close to 10,000. That's not bad. Well, now, what is it for, like...
All right, so for hockey, holds 12,300. Concerts, 19,000.
And
basketball,
hoops?
18,165.
Okay, so about half. Okay. But still, though, 9,750, close to 10 for a secondary pay-per-view and SmackDown on top.
Round up!
Not bad. Your buy rate, 0.58, which is pretty standard, I guess, for that. And your announcers, the current voices of the Blue Brand, Michael Cole and John Bradshaw Layfield. Who's actually very good on the show.
Yes.
All right. Now, you gave us the tagline about liver or lever. Why exactly did you say liver or lever?
Well, before you get to that, let's go through the Sutton notes because he touches on
it. Oh, I forgot about that guy.
And then, it's easy on the fourth. This is the
yeah, that's true.
To
yeah, it's quite
revile
true.
Him, not enjoy his notes.
Yes.
It's the day we're supposed to blame him for everything.
We're throwing his notes in the ocean.
Yes. Along with all his tea. Filthy, filthy tea.
Filthy tea.
All right. So, SmackDown, Rey Mysterio is still your world champion, 112 days into his reign. And by the way, do you remember the song for this show?
I absolutely do not.
Lonely Train by Blackstone Cherry. That's
no wonder I don't
A lot of
it.
Stag power for that one.
Yes.
ECW champion, Big Show. We'll talk about it. Well, I guess, did we talk about that on Saturday Smith event? A little bit, we did. We'll talk about it at SummerSlam.
Yep.
United States champion, Finley, who defeated Bobby Lashley, who defeated JBL. So a lot going on there. We'll talk about it in a few minutes. Mm-hmm. Brian Kendrick, Paul London, 63 days into their reign as tag champs. And Gregory Helms, $175 into his. So rolling on. We had one release. Stacy Keibler. Let her contract expire to pursue a modeling career. 66 matches of the promotion, 14-31-1 on TV. So quite a few bit of matches. Stacy quietly disappears after, I don't know the last time she was even on. I guess maybe she was on TV here and there. But
yeah, I don't remember on pay-per-view at all.
Early 05 maybe was like the last time she had any kind of like sustain when Orton was dating her and then attacked her.
Yeah. Yeah, probably. I don't think she did. I mean, she might have done stuff during the Diva search, but other than that, probably not.
So there you go. Yeah. We had one passing death here, Bob Orton Sr.
That's exactly what I was going to say. It. Yep. 76 years old.
July 16th. By the numbers, TV, SmackDown, 362 episodes, ECW 6. Rob Van Dam and Sabu on July 3rd stopped on Route 52 near Hanging Rock Village in Lawrence, Ohio. The officer originally stopped the pair due to Van Dam speeding, spilt marijuana, and performed a search of the vehicle. Discovered RVD was in possession of 18 grams of weed, 5 Vicodin, which are prescription pills, as Steven notes for us. Mm-hmm. On Sabu, they found drug paraphernalia.
Really?
Also had 9 pills that were not immediately identifiable but known to be a controlled substance. RVD was then suspended for 30 days. Of course, ended up losing both of his titles as soon as he did lose both of those. He was suspended for that time period. On July 6th, it was reported that Kurt Angle was off the road with underlying injury and personal issues. Sabu was only fined $1,000 for the incident, not suspended. On 7/20, it was announced on WWE Mobile, if you remember that, Bobby Lashley has elevated enzymes in his liver and cannot compete at the Great American Bash. We'll finish up the Sutton notes. We'll go back to the livers. On 7/24, Stephanie McMahon gave birth to Aurora Rose Levesque, and Scott Criscolo was there with a gift, like the Magi walking up to the house.
That is quite true.
On 7/27, announced that Kurt Angle has been suspended for a... Is that Magi? What did I say?
The Magi, yes, like the wise men. Yep.
That's what I said, right?
Yes, you're correct.
I hassled him before. On 7/27, it was announced that Kurt Angle has been suspended for a wellness policy violation. We'll talk about more on that as well. And there you go. So, dark match here for Naki over Simon Dean. So, the livers. Just prior to the pay-per-view, reports came out that three SmackDown stars, the Great Khali, Bobby Lashley, and Super Crazy, all forced to the sidelines due to elevated liver enzymes that showed up in their wellness tests. It was a major blow to the brand. Of course, all stars were set to compete on the show with Lashley and Khali in major matches. Rumors swirled as to why these enzyme levels were elevated, with steroids usually being claimed as a culprit. Well, follow-up tests came back clean, and all three men went back into action. So we'll talk about how all the matches were affected, but you know, it seems like at the end it was maybe false positives or whatever. They had to retest it. Full-time liver enzyme mania, though, with this one.
Mm-hmm.
Became a running joke for a long time, too. I mean, this is forever known as the liver enzyme pay-per-view.
Yeah.
I remember I was listening to it. I actually listened to a podcast around this time. It was like one of the first ones I ever listened to.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember the name of it, though. It was like Smart Wrestling Fan, something like that. And they had like a big episode about the liver enzymes. That was like one of the first podcasts I ever listened to.
That's funny.
Was that episode?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it was crazy when word leaked out. Do you remember when all this was going down?
Yeah. Oh no, I definitely remember. You and I chatted about it, and it was kind of bonkers because it wasn't a surprise because of what had been going on over the last year in the company. It just seemed very vague. I think that's what a lot of people were thinking about. Like some guys get pinched for legit, you know, like they'll say HGH, roids, whatever. And then you saw this, liver enzymes, and you're like, what does that really mean? Are these guys getting protected? Like, you look at Super Crazy and Khali, you're like, what the fuck could they possibly be taking? But Lashley, you're like, oh, it had to have been roids. I mean, look at them. So you're thinking, is liver enzymes kind of like a puss way of bailing them out of any long-term issues? So you're thinking, let's make up some fucking, you know, half-assed medical thing and get away with it. And so I think for a little bit of time after this, I think that's what people were thinking. I think that's what a lot of fans might have been thinking, like, what the hell does this even mean? And really the only – I mean, one of them – we'll get into it tonight. But, I mean, two of the three were big deals because both of them involved, I mean, huge feuds. One, they were able to kind of recover with little backlash, no pun intended. The other one turned out to be highly illogical, and we'll get to that when we get there. Super Crazy, who cared? They just did a swap, and we'll get to that in a little bit. But I think a lot of people thought liver enzymes was a smokescreen to protect these guys because they didn't want to admit that they were all on something and then had to be suspended longer than they wanted to. I think that, if I remember correctly, I think that's what kind of the original.
Well, it wasn't even a suspension, right? It was more of a like, because they started doing, it wasn't a wellness policy violation per se. It was like a wellness awareness thing. Like, remember they were running everyone through those tests, and something happens too, like the next year with another guy, where they kind of do these baseline tests, and these levels came back high. So they didn't, like, I don't know, I don't recall exactly, but from what I remember, they didn't fail tests per se. It's just that they went through a medical screening, and these levels came back high. So they were making sure they were cleared, and because they didn't have time to retest before the pay-per-view, they had to pull them. That's kind of my vague recollection of it all.
Mm. Yeah, I think so, too. And we didn't hear much about it after that, and everybody seemed fairly clean, at least in the public eye.
Right.
Once we get to 2007. But that's what I think a lot of people felt, that there was a little vagueness. But at the same time, no one said anything about – well, why don't we get started? When we get to the segment with Lashley, we'll get into how even – Teddy Long kind of explains it. I almost think he kind of did like a worked shoot
that. For sure.
So we'll get to that. All right. As we mentioned, this is Indiana's third pay-per-view. Obviously, the first two, WrestleMania 8 and In Your House, Buried Alive, which is one of our favorites. Actually, both of these shows are two of our favorites. Mm-hmm. All right. Let's get started. Oh, did you say we had dark matches? Was there any?
Yeah, it was Simon Dean and
Simon Dean and Funaki. Okay. All right, let's get started.
That's a
first
tough
match.
Loss for Simon Dean right there.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Wasn't he pretty much out the door by this point? All right, let's get started. First match, and we have a title on the line, JR. The Blue Belts, the WWE Tag Team Championships on the line. Your champions, as you mentioned, Mr. London and Mr. Kendrick, who won that crazy match at great match at Judgment Day. Taking on a new team that kind of got together over the past...
Now.
A month or so, yes.
Right now.
last month or so. Tell us who they are, JR. Two guys we know of already, but not in a tag team way.
The Pit Bulls consisted of Jamie Noble and Kid Cash.
Is one of them dead? Oh, wait, no. Never mind.
They're both dead, aren't they? But anyway. Begun teaming back in May, they adopted the old ECW gimmick and began wearing dog collars to the ring, officially debuting as the Pit Bulls on June 30th. Made a unit till Kid Cash was released out on September 27th. After his release, Cash returned to the indie scene and a little stop at TNA as well. Final record 1-4. I liked Cash and I liked this team quite a bit. The of course, they do receive the tag title shot here because on July 14th, Jamie Noble and Paul London pinned Paul London. On July 21st, Cash picked up a victory over Brian Kendrick, giving the challengers some momentum for this match. And as we mentioned, London and Kendrick still running as champs, becoming a steadying force in the division. Pitbulls, I thought it was a real nice use of these two talents, underutilized. I thought it was a perfect matchup for the champions. Pitbulls were aggressive. Their attitude is perfect. They show it off right away. Cash and London start things off with a little bit of scuffle. We get go to Cole and JBL going through all the past tag champs of the Bash. And JBL's already great, just bringing up history and making everything seem important just right out of the gate. Cash lands some headbutts, but London comes back with a flurry and makes a tag. Champs use some teamwork, and Kendrick works the arm until Cash punches out and tags. Noble goes into some vicious strikes, and he and Kendrick have a good back and forth. Kendrick gains control and tags out as the champs continue to maintain offense until Noble yanks London into the buckle and goes to work. Kendrick battles back again and the champs clean house, sending the Pit Bulls to the floor and then meet them with stereo dives to the outside. Cash chips up Kendrick on the top and Noble slams him down for the turning point. Pit Bulls come in and out, or they tag in and out and grind Kendrick to the mat as the crowd rallies the champs. JBL's on fire here with his one-liners blended in with history. Kendrick dodges a charge and makes a tag as London mows down Noble with a belly-to-belly throw. London gets caught in the apron, but as he skins the cat, Noble cracks him with a dropkick. I love that spot. That was a great spot.
Yes.
The Pit Bulls unleash an aggressive grinding assault again, the crowd staying with it, cheering on London. Pit Bulls cut off comebacks and use some nice tag work to maintain control. Cash and Noble get brash, showing off a bit while really slugging away. London almost makes a tag after some miscommunication, but Noble yanks Kendrick off the ropes. Great heel work there. London finally escapes and makes a tag as Kendrick comes in with a missile dropkick and then wipes out both challengers. Kendrick grabs some near falls but blocks a tiger bomb until London helps him out. Pit Bulls end up on the floor and Kendrick flies into Noble with a top rope crossbody. London blocks a Cash brainbuster and the champs do a double team drop salt sunset flip for the win. Fantastic match with a hot finish. Crowd loved it the whole way through. Tag division, I thought, with this kind of stuff could be golden if they could fill it up with matches like this. I thought the Pit Bulls looked great. There was nothing in this loss hurt them. They worked their asses off. They were aggressive. They were focused. A really strong opener, surprising strong opener to me. And it's a shame that we didn't get a prolonged feud with these teams, maybe trading the bells or something like that. But I really like this match a lot.
I was crazy about this match. Point one. You mentioned it in your comments. JBL, as much as he might be considered an annoying heel, which at the time he was most certainly not. The fact he talked about history, about the tag teams, about the fact that Kid Cash was trained by the Rock and Roll Express, and I can't believe he actually said. Well, I guess at this point it doesn't matter, but he said that Kid Cash and Ricky Morton won the NWA tag titles.
Yeah, the fact
he mentioned that was kind of wild. I didn't think he would. I mean, I know at this point it doesn't really matter, but. Still, sometimes things like that kind of, throw you off when they actually mention something like that. But so JBL, not only being annoying with, the whole sniping with Cole, even losing Taz's humor, I think JBL was much needed for Cole. I think Cole needed to be challenged a little bit. I think I don't want to say he was getting comfortable with Taz, but I think JBL brings a whole new dynamic.
Oh, yeah.
So different than Taz, and I think Cole needed that to be challenged a little bit, but he held his own. I mean, he would go back at JBL. It wasn't like Jesse with Shivani at SummerSlam 89, where Shivani by the middle of the show was hiding under the table. Cole really got back at him like, look, I'm not breaking your stones. I'm telling you the truth. He was like really getting back at him. So I thought their chemistry was great immediately, and kudos to JBL. Added a whole new dynamic to the heel announcer role. Number two, I was thrilled at the way the Pit Bulls wrestled. And even Cole alluded to it. They definitely did not wrestle like a typical cruiserweight tag team. And they're not big guys. Noble and Kid Cash are, cruiserweight size. They're both like, 220, probably 225. But very aggressive, almost like an NWA style team, which is funny considering what JBL said about Cash. They grinded. They almost, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, JR, but they almost wrestled like Ole and Arn. Very deliberate.
No, it was a different style. The aggression, you know? I loved how aggressive, and they called it out, how aggressive and focused they were. Like, you could yes. tell they knew this was their shot, and they were working their asses off at it. Yeah, a lot of grinding. It was very counterintuitive to cruiserweight style, but it was great because then when they went to the cruiserweight stuff later, it really made sense and paid off instead of just being a crazy spot fest. And London and Kendrick are so good at selling, you know,
yep.
just natural faces and so yep, good in I that agree. Role that to have guys that can work and believably, you know, grind them down and then go to the air, it made the whole thing pop. I mean, if you could give London and Kendrick a long reign against teams like this, it's a golden era of tag stuff. So we'll follow it as we go along, but you know, the Pitbulls are really, really good.
Yes, they were. And point three, this is more of a question. I don't know what their long-term plans were for London and Kendrick or the Pitbulls. Were you surprised that the London and Kendrick won?
No, not necessarily, because they never seem to get behind teams like the Pitbulls. You know, I mean, I don't know. I just...
Right. Okay.
I wasn't really surprised. I mean, okay. they seem to really like London and Kendrick and the... Yeah, that's just how it was.
Yeah, okay. I was just curious. That was my third point. I didn't think so either, but I thought it would be interesting to see if they were going to go further with them. But I really like this match, and we talk later about, you know, when we rank our best matches of our seasonal year, right. which WrestleMania to WrestleMania. We may haggle a little bit on this because I really would like to see this in the top three, but we'll chat about it. So London and Kendrick retain mm-hmm. retain their tag team championships with a very good match. Against a game Pitbulls team.
Game.
Game. Backstage, JR. We had some interesting beginning of a show-long storyline here.
Yeah, backstage. So Great Khali wants to destroy The Undertaker right now, and Daivari's screaming at him, begging him just to wait till later, wait till your match. You already have him in a match, but Khali is out of control. So kind of a weird segment. Obviously pays off later, but at the time, if you weren't in the know.
Made no sense.
Seems kind of odd.
Yeah.
So then, of course, we go back to the ring where Teddy Long comes out, announces that Bobby Lashley has elevated liver enzymes and has to miss tonight's show. Lashley comes out and says he's healthy, despite what those doctors say. He says he wants his title back and he's ready to fight, and the crowd agrees, but Teddy says he can't let it happen, playa. He promises he'll get a shot at the U.S. title soon as he's cleared. Lashley leaves, and Finlay and Regal walk out and just ignore and then snicker at Lashley. That made me laugh. Finlay says the enzyme stuff is a joke. He wants Teddy to declare him the winner by forfeit. Teddy says they promised the U.S. title match and says Finlay has to face his buddy Regal instead. JBL was awesome here, and he says, this is one of my favorite lines. JBL flips out, and he goes, I have a liver like Jake Roberts, and I've never had no elevated enzyme.
Yes, that was fucking great. So I'm like, wow.
That was fantastic. Oh, I was laughing so hard. I listened to that
yes,
twice.
The I did
delivery
too.
Was, so I had to listen to it twice so I could make sure I wrote it down exactly, and it was really, really funny. So.
It was hilarious.
So some background here. On 5/26, Lashley defeated JBL to win the U.S. title. The mm-hmm. next week, Lashley pinned King Booker in a non-title match. After the bout, Booker, Finlay, and Regal assaulted Lashley and forced him to kiss Booker's feet. On 6/9, Regal was bragging about the previous week's beatdown but was interrupted by a Lashley attack. Teddy then announced the two men would fight, and if Lashley won, he'd get a match with Booker. Lashley won the bout, and his match with Booker was set for the next week. But that week, Regal and Finlay jumped Lashley on his way to the ring, causing the match to be delayed. Finally, in the main event, Lashley picked up a clean, hard-fought win with the Over the King. On 6/23, Booker received another match with Lashley, and this one ended in a DQ with Finlay and Regal got involved. After the bout, Booker told Teddy Long that he would never fight Lashley again, but Long disagreed and made a cage match between the two. On 6/30, Lashley won the match, finally ending his long feud with Booker. However, Lashley still had issues with Booker's court, as on 7/7, it was announced that he would defend the U.S. title against Regal at the Bash. Fortunately for Lashley, he didn't make it that far because Finlay stole his title with the aid of a shillelagh on July 14th. The next week, Lashley lost a rematch by DQ when Regal got involved, and of course, the enzyme issue knocks him out of the match here. After winning King of the Ring, Booker, and we'll talk about this more later too, adapted a king persona and took it to another level, using an English accent, wearing his robe and crown, and forming his own court, consisting of Queen Charmelle and his new backup, William Regal and Finlay. And finally, on 5/26, a mysterious little leprechaun began appearing in front of the ring and aiding Finlay during his matches. In a funny twist, Finlay abused the little guy, kicking and throwing him around the ring with reckless abandon, shoving him back under the apron. The leprechaun would be called Little Bastard, is coined by Michael Cole in commentary, and is portrayed by indie wrestler Dylan Postal. Prior to signing with WWE, Postol spent time in NWA Wisconsin as short stack. So, little bastard aside, because we're going to have plenty of time to talk about him. What did you think about the formation of this court to support Booker? Because I thought it was a great idea. I thought it was
absolutely. Oh, absolutely fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. Because, obviously, they were pushing Booker, you know, to another level. And Regal and Finley are just two great fucking douchebags. So, and grizzled, like, legit guys. So, and they were all, you know, and they were, you know, Northern European descent, you know, British and Irish. So it kind of fit. And it was a good spot for both guys at the moment. Nothing really was going on with either of them. And kind of kept them on TV and made them pretty good heels. So it was a tremendous move. Booker's a good guy to have a faction with. So I applauded it. It was a huge boost for Booker, which right now was kind of needed on the in the promotion in terms of heels. So definitely proved it.
Yeah, definitely puts a nice little stable in place. And Finley and Regal are great as ass kickers, but they also are really good promo guys. They're really good, you know, legitimate tough guys. So it made for a great stable. And it makes sense that they'd be in a, you know, kingly stable. So it was a good fit. And in the ring, by the way, Regal replacing Lashley is a pretty big upgrade in ring wise. Of course, the feud in the story was all great for Lashley, and I liked Lashley. But if you could throw a Regal Finley match out here on pay per view, you have to do it. So JBL keeps ranting as they start to lock up and go at it. They maintain the lockup all the way to the floor and then back in. They still have it locked on. Basic stuff to start here until Regal sends Finley flying to the floor and then jamming him with an uppercut. Little bastard comes out from under the apron and smacks Regal with a shillelagh while chasing him around the ring. Finley regains control back in the ring after distraction, but the two continue to trade stiff blows wherever they can. Regal hits a boot to the face and a nice double underhook suplex for two, but little bastard reappears and bites Regal's hand, which Finley then targets. Regal turns it around and grabs a tight chin lock, but Finley escapes and sits down hard on Regal's gut and then spikes his chest hard on the edge of the apron. Both men collide heads back in the ring. Regal starts to choke away at Finley while grinding him down and then hitting a drop kick for two. Regal starts to pour it on using a suplex for a cover and then throws Finley to the floor as the asshole fan starts to chant boring, which Cole even comments on, and we're talking about this today, saying it's they were chanting it because they wanted Lashley, which no, they're just pieces of shit.
They probably and I think at that point they probably realized, they probably said in his ear, why didn't you acknowledge it? You're fired. No.
But it was, I mean, fuck them. Whatever. Yeah. So Finley assaults Regal on the floor with headbutts. This is why they shouldn't come back to Indianapolis. Finley assaults Regal on the floor with headbutts, leaving him draped in the apron and out of it, which allows little bastards to take off Regal's boot. Back inside, Finley stomps on the foot and then unloads some stiff punches. Finley whiffs on a charge, hits the post, leading to a close near fall. Regal grabs a shillelagh, but Bastard gives Finley Regal's boot, and he hits Regal with it for the win. That was really fun. It was hard-hitting. It was a sensible fight. You know, it was a good showcase for Bastard. Finley continues to be awesome. It's great to see Regal getting used again. I mean, I don't think it comes close to Finley Benoit from Judgment Day just because the Bastard stuff was played a bit for comedy, which is great. I mean, Regal does it well. So, but on that note, I can't put it into that top tier match as we've seen, but it was really, really fun. And they beat the piss out of each other as usual.
Yes. Point one, I was curious that we talk about the three liver patients, I guess you could say, or whatever. Why they acknowledged Lashley's on camera and not the other two, which we'll get to later.
I think it was just the easiest way to tell the stories. Like, crazy, they could just yank out, and it really didn't matter. I don't need to explain it. Khali, it's easier to protect him a bit, and it's kind of foolish to say, these guys all have high level liver enzyme levels. It's kind of easier to kayfabe it. It is use the story for one guy, and you can kind of make it sympathetic for Lashley. You know, you pull him out. He's trying to fight through it. Doctors won't let him. You know what I mean? It's more of an underdog kind of face story.
So you don't think it makes him look weak?
No.
No? Okay.
No. It's not like they said he has, you know, whatever, thyroid cancer. I don't know what makes him weak.
Diarrhea? I thought you were going to say diarrhea.
I don't know. No, I don't think it makes him, you know. The doctors found something. They're keeping him out. No, I don't think at all it makes him. I don't think it seems
all right. No, I'm just curious.
It's like, you have high estrogen levels, sir. You can't rest.
You cannot work with your man boobs. Okay. Point two. I'm getting this feeling as we've been watching these SmackDown side shows that it's SmackDown's kind of going back to that 2003 feel where really mat based, guys really working their asses off and putting on tremendous matches. And, you know, I know we kind of been we kind of pissed and moaned about the SmackDown roster in 2005, but right now it's really pretty good. Mm-hmm. You've got a good combination of main event guys that are good workers, not work rate marvels, but good workers, and this mid-card has gotten really good. And I know that when we talked about it earlier in the year, we talked about how Finley was just kind of there to kind of glue the young guys together and really wasn't meant to do much of anything else, but clearly he's become like a top guy in the main, in the mid-card. I don't think they really expected that. So that's a huge bonus. And you got a guy like Regal. Like, you have, the one good thing about being on SmackDown, and I think that's a thing SmackDown needs to have modern day, is you have these serviceable mid-card guys that you could really put in any slot and really enhance the younger guys, which is really going to be key for SmackDown now, now that they'll be live and all that kind of stuff. But back then, I think with Cena, Edge, DX, and all that stuff, the 06 SmackDown reminds me a lot of 03 SmackDown, and kind of 06 Raw reminds me a lot of 03 Raw, except a little bit better work rate than 03. But I just, watching this match made me realize, wow, you know, 2006 SmackDown was starting to get really tremendous work rate again. Really good in-ring matches, and we're 2 for 2 tonight, in my opinion. And point three, I think Regal should have won. I think that would have been a good kind of underlying storyline going on within Booker's court, that you got these two guys who Teddy Long kind of forced to not, you know, like each other, respect each other, but entirely trust each other. And I think Regal being U.S. champion after thinking that they got the got one over on Teddy and on Lashley, I think would have added a little bit to the storyline. Not that I'm upset. I'm fine. Finley won, but I think Regal winning the belt here would have added a little intrigue to that intertwining Booker's court. So, but having said that, the match was very good. Was it Regal? I mean, was it Finley Benoit? No. Again, they had to keep the whole, you know, leprechaun thing going.
Right. And it was a good time to showcase it because it's not really a heated feud.
Right.
It's not really like a big time match. So it's kind of like whatever. If they, you know, yeah. It's a good match to kind of sacrifice and get the gimmick over. And I'm fine with Regal not winning the title. I mean, I love Regal and he'll get pushes still to come. But
oh, yeah.
Like Finley had to earn this slot. So I'd let him run with it for a bit.
No, it's fine. Like I said, it wasn't a big deal. I just thought that if they decided to have Regal win, I think it would have been fine. I think it would have enhanced Booker's court storyline. But having said that, it's not the end of the world. So Finley retains his United States Championship in a very good match that came out of nowhere due to medical issues. Okay. Do we go backstage?
Yes, just for a quick second.
Yep.
As Chavo Guerrero gives Rey Mysterio a pep talk, tells him he has his back and makes sure his dreams come true here tonight.
Interesting. Okay. Next up, JR, another our second match of the evening that is liver or lever.
Mm-hmm.
We were supposed to have our third title match of the evening as the Cruiserweight Championship was supposed to be on the line. Your champion, of course, a guy I might be one of my favorite guys in the whole company at this moment, Gregory Helms, one of the best theme songs, too. I was supposed to take on Super Crazy, but as we saw, Super Crazy also pinched with high enzymes.
Mm-hmm.
So he has to sit. They didn't really. Did they acknowledge?
I don't think they even mentioned it because I didn't realize until I read later. Like I don't have it in my notes because they never said it on air.
Yeah.
So I just and even we have in our other notes here. Gregory Helms originally scheduled to face Super Crazy, but was pulled off the card, and Matt Hardy was announced as a last minute. Well, he was just a last minute unannounced substitution. Just comes.
Yeah.
Out.
So it was very weird. Yeah.
They probably just figured whatever, you know.
Yeah, and they figured, you know, whatever, no one's going to notice. And you put these two together, you'll be fine. So so they go. So Gregory Helms not defending the title against Super Crazy and not defending the title at all. And I'll get to that in my comments. But now facing fellow Omega-ite Matt Hardy.
Of course, non-title because Hardy's not in the weight class. Yes. Helms being given a solid shot to run with the belt and establish himself here. We get a stalemate to start as the crowd cheers on Hardy loudly. Hardy hooks on a side headlock and then runs Helms to the floor before meeting him with a dive. Helms gets a desperation neckbreaker to stop Hardy and then hammers away. JBL's just on fire here again, super aggressive, flipping out on Cole. Helms hits another neckbreaker for two and then clamps on a cobra clutch. Hardy flips out of it and gets a short flurry with a near fall, but Helms lands a kick and blocks the side effect to put Hardy back to the mat. Hardy meets Helms on the top, but Helms slugs him down and hits a super swinging neckbreaker that wipes out both guys. Helms recovers first, attacks the jaw, and then goes to a tight chinlock and front chancery to level some knees to the face. Helms fights up, and they trade some stiff hands until Hardy hits a side effect and a bulldog for near falls. Helms reverses a twist of fate into a neckbreaker for two, but Hardy catches him with a moonsault for a near fall. Hardy follows with an elbow off the middle rope, mounts Helms in the corner, but Helms drops him with snake eyes and hooks the tights to steal the win. It was a really good match. It was focused, hard-hitting offense. The flow was real smooth. It ebbed back and forth. Mm-hmm. I think it's one of Helms' best matches in years. And Hardy was great, too, as a steady face veteran, kind of holding the match together. I thought this was kind of a hidden gem. I like this. I mean, it would have probably gotten Match of the Night buzz if it wasn't for that opener. So, I mean, so far we're three matches in, and all have been really damn good.
I agree with you 100%. Point one, love the weight class situation. Like, I mean... it's not kayfabe and it is kayfabe, but I like the fact that Matt Hardy doesn't get a title shot because he's not weight class. I mean, that's kind of cool. I like that. That's like old school, you know, gorilla mentioning the championship committee kind of thing. See, I love that. That was awesome. I love that. Point two, I think it made sense logistically. I don't want to think that they just randomly picked Matt Hardy just because he's Matt Hardy. I'd like to think that being a former Omegaite and, you know, that they were so tight that they're like, you know what, we need a really good match here. You two know each other for 20 fucking years or whatever. Go out there and do something. I think that's why they picked him.
And Hardy wasn't on the card. I mean, that's right. Part of it, too. And they needed, someone to go out there. I don't know who they had left over. I'd have to dig out the SmackDown roster from this point. But, no, Hardy was a good choice on many levels. And that's one of them, like you said.
Yes, no, definitely. And I feel like I bagged that out here. I got thunder, I got fireworks, I'm bombing all over the place here. That's why I think the choice was made. I think it was fantastic. And point three, getting back to what I said in the second match about the stability of the mid-card on SmackDown, I am loving Helms. I mean, you want to talk about anybody who needed, by the way, I love Matt Hardy mocking Hurricane with the little move. That was really funny, too. I enjoyed that. I think that was an inside rib to his fellow Omega guy. That's why I think he did that. But point three, getting back to what I was saying in the last match about the stability of the mid-card on SmackDown, Helms, to me, has been the MVP, one of the MVPs of this year on both shows. If anybody needed a character change more in this whole company in the last year, it was him. Here's a guy with untapped talent, and you were sticking him with this shit gimmick that, after 4 years now, he's had it since, the invasion. It needed to go. It needed to go. And I think he wanted this character bad. I think he wanted to shake the Hurricane thing, and he's been great. Absolutely great. And we were so upset at New Year's Revolution when he had a job to Lawler. I mean, that was just stupid. I feel like he's recovered from that, and now you're seeing a tremendous performance night in and night out on both the show and pay-per-view. So I can't loud enough the exploits of Helms right now. I mean, he's been such stability in the mid-card, just like Finlay and just like Regal, among other guys, but for different reasons. He's just so great in the ring. He's really promoted the Cruiserweight belt. And we've talked about it, JR, we kind of alluded to it in the first match, how these Cruiserweights right now are not wrestling like Cruiserweights, which actually makes the title seem almost more wanted, more yearned for. Because not everybody has to be a flip-flop and fly guy. And Helms really isn't. I mean, yeah, he does aerial moves, but he's kind of like Edge. You know, he's a smaller guy who kind of wants to work like a grapple power style, even in the Cruiserweight division. And I think that's huge to be that unique. So I'm very happy with how the Helms has settled into the mid-card and settled into the Cruiserweight Championship on SmackDown. So there we go. Gregory Helms wins the match, doesn't retain his title because it wasn't up for grabs, but a fantastic third match. And you're right, JR. Again, did you think 3 for 3 in the beginning? I mean, I didn't.
Definitely not. Definitely not.
You know? So there you go. So Gregory Helms wins. Backstage again?
We do go backstage again. This is where the Great Khali is stalking around still backstage. Daivari begging him, saying the match is next. Calm down. Taker shows up and stares down Khali with his big giant robe on, which is kind of goofy. Big Show attacks him and lays him out. Teddy Long comes in with the refs to break it up. We get a video package, and then after that, Teddy pulls Khali out of the match and puts Big Show in.
What?
Yeah, because Big Show, of course, helped perpetuate the beating. So Show tries to get out of it. Teddy forces him in. Of course, this is all the elaborate way to get Khali out due to the liver enzymes. That was kind of rough, you know, for them after the intense and dedicated build with Taker getting his revenge after putting Khali over clean, and then he gets pulled out of the match. And I don't know. To me, nothing makes sense. Like, Show is being pushed as this big bad heel, and then he looks like a pussy here. He's, you know, he's basically like crying about the match. You know what I mean? Like, he's supposed to be this badass hardcore guy, and he gets put in this match with Undertaker, who's fought a million times before, and now he's like in tears over it. It's like, come on. I don't know. The whole thing felt so forced.
But, it did.
I mean, with all that, you know, with all that build and everything, it's like they had to go through with the gimmick. You know what I mean? Even with that going on, they just, you know, they kind of had to do it.
Yeah, and it was unfortunately, it was awkward because this is the one storyline that, I mean, this is pretty much the number two storyline of the show, and the liver enzymes, you know, screw you. So that's what still makes me think if they knew something further back when we had the whole thing at the WWE versus ECW show, and then again, I still think something was shaken there, but that's just me. So there you go. So now the Punjabi prison match is going to have two guys who aren't from India. So
right. Yeah. No, it made no sense. I mean, so following Judgment Day, Khali went on a weekly reign of terror on SmackDown. At 6:30, Daivari challenged Undertaker to face Khali in this Punjabi prison match at the Bash. The next week, Daivari wheeled a casket to ringside. When he went to open it, the lights flickered, smoke poured out, and the Undertaker's voice bellowed, accepting Daivari's challenge. Taker returned to TV for the first time since Judgment Day at 7:14, accepting the challenge in person. And the next night on Saturday's main event, we talked about last week, Khali and Big Show headed to the ring and talked about fighting someday to determine who the true giant of WWE was. Before they finished, Taker came out and knocked Khali to the floor. Taker and Show brawled. Khali came back in. They dropped Taker with a double choke slam. And, of course, later that week, Taker and Show fought to a double countout. So, I mean, it's possible, Scott, that they knew. I mean, I thought it was just kind of days before this, but I guess it's, I guess they could have had a whiff. I mean, it would have been about 8 days before. I don't know. I think they were still doing it, just kind of use Show as a, because Khali just still wasn't ready for some of this stuff, you know what I mean? So I think they were just kind of using Show as his heavy, and he was getting over as the badass, so maybe just trying to perpetuate him. Remember, they were doing a lot of crossover stuff, like I said, him and Taker Show fought on ECW, so they were doing a lot of that. So they might have been using Show on that level, too. He was kind of bouncing back between shows, so.
Right.
And they could have done something like that. Good. You got something.
So, no, I was about to say, which brings us to our next match.
Yeah.
Because here we are in what is called the Punjabi prison match. It is The Undertaker and The Big Show. it sounds like something you would make up on like 2K6 or whatever. What was the game on that? What was it? SmackDown Know Your Role or whatever? Whatever the 06 game was. It just seems like it's made up. Now,
that's
Punjabi,
the Glenn Butler game, so you ask him.
That's true. So anyway, the Punjabi prison is two cages made of bamboo, right? The inside cage is bamboo too, right? Yeah. It's kind of like a kennel from hell, except it was bamboo instead of metal.
Right.
And you had to get out of both. One had four
convoluted rules.
I know. There was a trap door on each wall of the inside cage.
Right.
And then you had to go out of those, and they're only in for a minute. And once they close, and then you have to get out another way.
So there's four doors.
It sounds like a WCW 98 storyline.
Right. So once the door opened, it was only open for a minute. And if you didn't escape it, that door closed, it was locked. So it was very convoluted, very, very bizarre.
Yeah, it was
very
weird.
Complicated.
And then once you get out of that cage, then you have to climb over. I mean, Jesus Christ, you had to climb out over the outside cage, which had spikes on top of it. This was so WCW, it was ridiculous. No wonder they were in the same building as Sin. And you think to yourself, JR, forget Big Show and Taker. You have three guys involved in the whole combination, and you're like, wait a minute. How the hell were any of these three going to climb over the fucking wall?
Yeah, it was. It
I
was
mean, seriously.
The whole thing was a mess. I mean, right? Even Khali. I mean, he could barely bend his knees. You know, like, how the hell was he going to climb up the cave? I don't know what they had planned for any of this. I mean, I guess it was a shrewd way in some ways. This is my rationalization. They wanted Taker to get the win back, but they didn't want Khali to get pinned. So they came up with this. So Taker could win the match, escape. Khali kind of has an excuse for losing, doesn't get pinned. Taker gets his win. Like, that had to be the reasoning why they
right.
did this. And just to be stupid, I don't know. I don't know. It's a really weird gimmick. The whole thing is really weird. You don't need to make gimmicks as complicated. There's so many rules. It took me halfway through the match to even understand what the hell they were talking about. You know what I mean? I'm like, oh, that's what it means when the door is only open. You know, it's like, I didn't really realize there was four doors for a while. The whole thing was really weird. So, like we mentioned, Show really doing well as the dominant heel champ with Heyman giving him an intense push. And then they throw him on this show and he's crying and sniffling about being in the match. The whole thing was dumb. Show attacks out the bell, chokes and stomps away. Taker battles right back and punches the show. Show comes back with some heavy strikes. Taker lands some heavy right hands to knock Show to his knees and then starts kicking him in the head and the gut. Taker tries to climb out, but Show trips him up and crotches him on the bamboo. Show uses a strap to choke Taker and keeps overpowering until Taker traps him against the bamboo and careens him twice, but Show catches him in the third try. Taker turns a choke slam into a sloppy DDT, but Show comes right back as a countdown for open door starts. Time runs out, door closes permanently. Show uses a strap to whip Taker and then removes a buckle pad, but Taker comes back with punches and a leaping clothesline. Show yanks down Taker during an old school and calls for the door to open, but neither can escape before the clock ticks out, so that door's done. Taker gets busted open, and Show slowly works him over some more, headbutting the cut. Show tries to escape, but Taker hits a low blow and superplex for the best bump of the match, in my opinion. Door opens, and Taker escapes this time while Show is laid out. Show recovers, and he exits out the final door, which the whole thing was kind of dumb. Anyway, and he and Taker battle while climbing the outer wall. Show pitches Taker back in the ring just as the final door closes, trapping Taker inside. So Show starts to, and I like that. That was kind of a smart spot anyway. Show starts to slowly scale the outer wall, but Taker climbs out of the inner cage and then onto the outer wall. Show tries to stop him, but Taker swings on a rope and drop kicks him like Tarzan. Taker puts Show through a table, and then Show gets busted open as the two amble around for a bit. Crowd's been pretty into this, amazingly enough. And as we've seen, Taker's been super over here in 2006. Khali comes down the aisle as Taker leaps off the cage wall into Show, who tumbles back and busts the wall down, and then Taker's named the winner. I thought it was long and plodding. I thought it was confusing. They did what they could, considering all the constraints around them. The crowd dug it, so, you know, poobah to them. Show was fine. I thought he was just overexposed. He was being protected well in ECW, and then he gets thrown out into this mess. Taker's very over. To me, that's the end result of all this. But, God, what did you think of this? I thought it ground what had been a pretty hot show right to a halt.
Yeah. Point one, for the first time in a long time, WWE decided to go with aesthetics over practicality. WCW was infamous, and I know we were goofing a minute ago, but I'll elaborate. WCW for a long time, and the Yard Gnome Rotella is watching the network. He's watching all the WCW pay-per-views in chronological order like I did. And like 97, 98, 99, they were doing some like unbelievably stupid gimmicks that had no sense whatsoever, but sounded good and made things sound really fancy schmancy. When in reality, they made no sense at all. WWE never did that. WWE was very straightforward in their stipulations. This is the first time that they actually took something aesthetically cool and lost all practicality. When they showed the wide shot, you're like, wow, this fucking thing is amazing. Look at all the big high walls, all this bamboo, ooh, really mysterious. And in the end, you're like, this makes no sense, though.
Yeah.
And WWE never does that. They never risk practicality in favor of making something look really good. So that's
part of it too, was just a continued over push of Khali, like trying to give him his own gimmick, you know, make it intimidating. Maybe he was supposed to win and they didn't want Taker to get pinned again. Maybe that was I think either way they did this climb out kind of gimmick so one of those guys could be protected. So maybe it's the opposite, you know, maybe Khali, they wanted to give him another win without having a pin Taker. I don't know. But either way, I'm pretty sure that's why they did this. That's my guess.
Well, that the way the match ends brings me to a later point. Point two, Show Taker. I mean, I know it had to be done because they had no other ideas, but it just didn't. And the crowd, booed two legit awesome wrestlers, but we're all over this freaking shit show. So who knows?
And the tough thing was, like we said, they couldn't just cancel it because they had, you know, they had the whole thing there. What were they going to do? There's so much hype and build and, you know, everything going into this. They couldn't really just go ahead and say, oh, screw it. You know, I mean, we just won't have it.
Couldn't they just have Taker? Couldn't Kali? Couldn't they have just broken the, you know, bent their rules just a little bit for Kali here? Let him wrestle and have Taker like win quick or something. I don't know. I don't think there was a point. I think that's the worst part.
I don't think it's
no
about breaking their own rules. I mean, I think they were doing it. They were just trying to be overly cautious with the wellness thing. God forbid they send this guy out here and he has some kind of major issue and then has a freaking heart attack. You know what I mean? And they knew about it.
God forbid he bleeds and, you know, something's in his blood and
right.
Like,
so
you know,
I think the whole Bob Orton thing.
Yeah.
I think they had to play it safe. I don't think it was some kind of internal policy. I mean, you know, they worked around that all the time. Look at RVD. I mean, he got banged by the cops and then, you know, he wrestled twice, lost the titles, then got suspended. You know what I mean? So I think if it was anything like that, they would have had Kali go out there. But do you think they should have done Daivari?
That would have been ridiculous. Could you imagine? It would have been fun to watch him bounce around like a pinball machine.
Right, exactly. Maybe just have him get his ass kicked for a while. Maybe Show comes and helps him somehow. And then you do that instead. Like, that feels like a little bit more like revenge and not as plotting. And, you know, this kind of made Big Show look silly, I thought. I thought they were doing so well keeping him protected and you know, just doing what they could to not make him look goofy. And then this whole thing, I thought, didn't help him at all.
No, it didn't. And point three, we were talking about the end of the match. Do you think they were going more for a Steve Vince Massacre 99 ending? Maybe Kali like lifts Taker up and throws him through the wall.
Yeah, I mean, they
and breaks
do
and
that
he falls
anyway,
out.
So.
I mean, that's really probably what they were going for. Because seriously, how the fuck were either of those guys going to climb over that wall?
Right.
Oh, any of three of them, Taker, Show, or Kali. I mean, seriously, who would have really thought that? I mean, that would have been, I don't know. Words can't describe how you could wrap your head around that. Like, how the fuck are any of these three guys climb that high up?
It was bizarre.
I mean, it's so because I'm bizarre. Because, I mean, even Taker's in halfway decent shape, but still, I mean, he's, you know, close to 50 or whatever, mid-40s or whatever. I mean, you know, the other two guy, I mean, Big Show or Kali trying to climb? And it wasn't even like a regular cage where you could go up like in ladder form. I mean, it's ridiculous. Utterly ridiculous. So Taker wins this utter mess. And I guess a fourth point I have is now they have to kind of extend the feud. I don't know if they were planning to, but now you have to extend the feud. You have to write something out. If they weren't planning to write anything out, if they were just going to have Taker win this match and be done with it, who knows? So now, obviously, you have to extend it. All right, why don't we take a break? Four matches in. Honestly, JR, other than that mess, not a bad show.
No, it was really good until that. I mean, the first three matches were very, very good.
Yeah.
To great.
So when we come back, we have a little eye candy, the return of the animal, and then, of course, our main event for the World Heavyweight Championship. But first, many Independence Day words, because Treason Day, as the Queen would say.
Don't give up until you drink from the silver cup. And ride that highway in the sky. This is for all the single people.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds as well. On the Place to Be podcast feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with clotheslines and headlines, main event, Mission Indie Possible, in our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super Shows. Relive Wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. We also have sports covered too with the Sports Lounge, the TJ McClune Show, and NBA Team Podcast. On our brand new PTB Pop podcast feed, we offer great shows such as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both feeds on iTunes and be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows are available on PlaySimation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to check out on the right-hand side of the site for details on how to support the site when you shop at Amazon and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This is Parv, and I'm here to tell you to listen and subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation podcast network. That's the PWO PTBN podcast network, where you'll find a ton of in-depth shows done by hardcore fans. We've got Chris Zellner's 1-2 Punch of Exile on Bad Street, and with David Bickenspan, a smash hit Between the Sheets. We've got Wrestling Culture with Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave, Goodwill Wrestling and the reaction shows with Good Old Will from Texas. We got This Week in Wrestling with my man Pete and Johnny Sorrow, Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston's Pro Wrestling Super Show, Tag Teams Back Again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze, and a ton of other great shows too. And of course, there's Titans of Wrestling and Where the Big Boys Play with yours truly and some dude from down south called Chad. PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network.
Hey, this is Dr. Tom Pritchard, and you're listening to the Place to Be podcast on the Place to Be Nation.
Celebrating this Independence Day 2016 with a look back 10 years to the 2006 Great American Bash. Of course, very patriotic here today and patriotic every day at PlaceToBeNation.com. Plenty to check out for you there as well. Our Vintage Vault previewing done by Steve Riddle looked at a match we're going to talk about shortly, and that's Batista versus Mr. Kennedy. Sure, check that out. Get his take there. Joel Barnhart has his power rankings for June 16 in Major League Baseball. And then, you know, Scott, I did a little piece today because 23 years ago was the body slam that rocked the World Wrestling Federation when Lex Luger came out of the helicopter, slammed Yokozuna, started his face turn. But I went through that, kind of picked apart how that went down, and I looked at the WWF's other options that they had at the time. Could any of them work better than Lex Luger? And part of my overarching theme of that was, what do you do when you don't listen to your fans and you kind of pick a guy and you push him no matter what? Because there's a lot of comparisons between what happened with Luger then and what's going on today with guys like Roman Reigns. So be sure to check that piece out if you haven't yet.
And I also think it's quite fitting, JR, because we're in the middle of our Vintage Vault refreshes, yes, of those Raws, and we're coming up on that. So it's a nice companion piece.
There you go. So be sure to check that out. I liked how it came out, so I hope you enjoyed it as well.
Yes.
Between the Sheets. Another great thing you should check out here at PlaceToBeNation.com. Our boys Chris and Bix, joined by Jeff Hawkins from Shake Them Ropes, to look at June 28th to July 4th, 1988, in the world of dirt and wrestling. So be sure to check that podcast out. You should listen to that each and every week because it is fantastic. A new Exile on Bass Street as well, looking at Part 5, finishing up their story on Continental Wrestling. 6-plus months is the final piece of this, spanning May to November 89. So the final days of that promotion, and if you haven't caught up on that, 5 parts on Continental, well worth your time investment. A new This Week in Wrestling as well. Parv continues his trip through his top 100 music artists, looking at 75 through 51. And like you mentioned, Scott, our Vintage Vault Refresh series continues as well. We're into March 93. PTBN's main event. You want to talk about that little diddy-do?
Yes, tremendous episode. Myself, JD, Jordan Duncan, and Mr. Ben Morse. We did our mid-year report card. We went through the whole WWE roster and NXT roster, picked and chose some guys, and the two gentlemen gave us their grades of the first 6 months and how their next 6 months should shake out. And we also had the first ever main event mailbag, as you, the listener, gave us some questions. It was a fun segment. We'll definitely do that again. Mm-hmm. So check it out. It was a very good episode.
All right. Also, check out the Hard Traveling Fanboys podcast, number 10. the 2016 Haffy Awards. Of course, he's usually done in writing, but this year we're doing it in podcast form. Greg and Nick, joined by Todd Weber, Tim Capel, Russell Sellers, and our good friend Stephanie Holly, to hand out the awards in comics for the first half of 2016. Check that out today if you're a comics fan on the PTBN Pop iTunes feed. PTBN's excellent WWE Network adventure continues as well. We looked at TNT from October 1st, 84. So check out each and every one of these things at PlaceToBeNation.com. You can follow us on Twitter, PlaceNumber2BNation, Facebook.com/PlaceToBeNation as well, Instagram, Tumblr, we're there, and all three iTunes feeds, the Place to Be podcast, the PWO PTBN podcast, and PTBN Pop. All three feeds always updated almost daily. Pretty much you'll have a new show one way or another. So be sure to check those out. All our full catalogs available at the website or at PlaceToBe.podbean.com. So you can catch up if you're new, or if you're current, be sure to stay current. Check all that out. And, of course, we have a new episode of Clotheslines and Headlines coming this week as well. We have some really fun guests, Scott. That'll be out Wednesday. We have the Cowboy, Cowboy Morissette, coming on to preview Brock Lesnar's big showdown at UFC 200. I'm sure we'll talk about the other matches as well, or the other fights, I should say. And I'll be watching that with the Cowboy Saturday night at Boneheads.
Nice.
So, excited for that. What else we got? We got our buddy Hugh Little from Pro Wrestling Talking Sheet, I should say. He'll be on as well talking the draft. We're going to talk the Cruiserweight Challenge. We're going to talk our first half MVP. So looking forward to having Hugh on making his PTBN debut. So he's excited. We're excited. Glenn Butler will be with us to talk Lucha Underground. And, of course, Aaron George returns as well. He will be joining us for TNA. We'll be talking Final Deletion, the Battle of the Hardys, in the backyard of their homes. So we're looking forward to that one. We'll be breaking that down for you piece by piece. And of course, Hugh Little is at Hugh Little Sheet, co-host of Talking Sheet. So be sure to check that out. Okay, we'll talk about that more Wednesday. But here tonight, Scott, we're back at the Bash.
Yes, we are. Let's head back to Conseco. And for those that haven't listened to it yet, I just need to say again, JR, our first episode of Clotheslines and Headlines was exceptional.
Thank you.
You guys did a fantastic job. It was a lot of fun. And it was a nice dichotomy. Three great guys, you and Willie and the Godfather, all different personalities working well together and firing off topics. And him and Aaron doing, mostly him and Aaron, you guys chimed in doing that TNA. I couldn't stop laughing. It was so great. It was a good combination. But
well, I'm really looking forward to this big Final Deletion match. And we were actually supposed to record Tuesday night, but once that match was announced, we shifted to Wednesday because we wanted to make sure that we could do it its justice, and cover that. And actually, you know, before we get back to the Bash guy, I do want to mention our buddy Jason Sherman reached out earlier today. All of this information is on Twitter and Facebook, but really quick, he's a big fan of the show, been a loyal listener for quite a while, very active on Twitter and Facebook with us. The other day, he set up a GoFundMe. Both him and his cat are both ill. And they're in quite a bit of financial trouble trying to pay these bills. Normally they'd be okay, but having both of the treatments at the same time is really setting him and his family back. So what he's doing, he's asking if anyone has any extra cash floating around, you know, $5, $10, whatever you can give. He has the GoFundMe information, which I'll read in a moment. And we are PlaceToBeNation.com, and the nation itself, you know, many times we've all come together to help support different friends of the nation, family members of the nation, you know, whether it was Scott's golf tournament, the breast cancer walk, when J.O. was having his problems, you know, there's been a lot of rallying around people. So we'd ask you again, if you can find, you know, scrape together a few bucks to help Jason out here. You know, do we know each other? No, but he's a listener. He's a fan. We're all family here. So anything we can do to help each other out, we want to do. He's offering, he has some free autographed wrestling pictures and cards. If you give $10 and you email him at bushbum16stone@gmail.com, you can ask him and he'll send you one of those autographed pictures. I mean, you know, do it anyway, maybe even without getting the autographed picture. But if you want one, he's happy to send it. So it's www.gofundme.com/2C2WGMK. So that link is on Facebook and Twitter. Be sure to hit that up if you need it and you forget it, whatever. Just message us and we'll get it over to you. So if you can help him out, you'll help us out as well. We like to take care of all our listeners and friends and family. So whatever you can do to help us out, we appreciate it.
Absolutely. Yes. We'll always continue to find new ways to give, pay it forward and give back. So definitely kick in if you can. Yep. All right. Let us return to Conseco Fieldhouse.
Okay.
We continue to go downhill. This, I mean, this, This next one's got plenty of eye candy, but well, it was fine. Well, I'm sure you booked this, perv man, with your spray tan. But it's after a great start to this show, this kind of goes downhill. This continues, in my opinion, the over-pushing of somebody. But how'd we get here, Taylor?
That is fine.
Bring them all on a Southern Caribbean cruise.
I'm recommending on a bill. These four women competed in a bikini contest, which was won by Ashley, who had debuted on SmackDown the week prior. On 7/21, Ashley teamed with Jillian to defeat Crystal and Michelle McCool. Former school teacher Michelle McCool made her WWE debut during the 2004 Diva Search. After elimination, she signed a three-year deal with the company, showed up on SmackDown in early 05 with a personal trainer gimmick, and made her in-ring debut in a mixed tag match on March 3rd. After a brief feud with Melina, Michelle was sent to DSW for some developmental work. On 6/2/06, she returned to SmackDown as a heel with a sexy teacher gimmick. Also, Crystal Marshall spent time as a model, music video dancer, and as a Barker beauty on Price is Right before signing up for the 05 Diva Search. Finishing fourth, she signed to a deal and was sent to Deep South as well. December 05, she was brought to SmackDown as a backstage correspondent and slowly transitioned into being an active competitor in early 06. So that brings us to our bra and panties match. Card quality continues to sink, like you mentioned, Scott. Very heatless with this new crop of divas. Hasn't really clicked yet. Jillian's better than this. She should have been a Raw, I thought, especially if we saw a couple, you know, her in Ring. Was it last month or whatever show that was? I thought she should have been a Raw fighting with the other women for the title instead of this. All four pair off into cat fights. We open up with some punching and hair pulling. Jillian and Michelle spill to the floor for more of the same. Usual nonsense, trying to strip each other while rolling around. Michelle gets some decent-looking knee lifts in while Jillian does what she can to keep things together. The brawling intensity increases, feels like more of a fight than some of these other matches that we usually get with them. Faces and heels pair off until Michelle attacks Crystal and they roll around. The crowd has really died off as this drags on. Ashley and Jillian team up to strip down Crystal, and Ashley's named the winner. Jillian's annoyed because she helped, but before she leaves, Ashley calls her back and tells her to celebrate in the corner, but that cat Ashley sneaks up and pants her instead, so Jillian returns the favor and the crowd is just dead. This went way too long. It was pretty awkward. They had a couple of moments, a couple of spots, but overall, just, you know, look, it's hot women getting naked, basically, so it is what it is. But when it eats up this much time, we've seen it so many times before, and the women aren't really given, at least when we were getting this stuff like in 01 and 02, the women kind of had characters and you kind of knew them and what they were about, but it's right. Like, you're just getting these women out of the factory with this generic gimmick and generic look. You're not really given a reason to care either way, so...
Right.
They're just faceless. You know what I mean? They're just out there getting stripped down. There's no reason to get into it besides just, oh, women, you know. But 06, you know, internet porn and everything was really gaining steam. So it's kind of, it gets harder and harder.
What a great way to put it.
Well, it does. I mean, in 99, you know, you saw working on magazines or, you know, dial-up modems. You know, Sonny and Sable and, you know, BB get naked and everything else. You know, Kitty, you know, it was a little, you know, at least it was giving you something to get into. But by this point, it's kind of like, all right, I can see this anywhere else on the internet, you know. Some of these women even, I can see, you know, Playboy or other sites. So it's like, you know, whatever. Seeing Ashley in a bra for the 75th time isn't really worth, like, the 9-minute investment of them, you know, awkwardly fighting in the ring. So to me, it's just diminishing returns at this point with this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with women who are talented, like Jillian in the ring, that right. could be used elsewhere.
Yeah. I'll be honest with you, I couldn't find 3 points. I have one. Besides the fact it was, you know, heatless, you know, drivel. I feel like they really like Ashley a lot. Mm. And trying to find something for her. Christy Hemme was different because she kind of had that.
You could say they're trying to escort Ashley up the card.
Indeed. But at least with Christy in 05, she had that allure to her that she could be used for backstage. She could be multifaceted, which they still did with Crystal at this point.
Christy had some charisma.
Yes.
Ashley doesn't really.
Ashley is trying too hard, and she just doesn't. There's nothing else to do with her. So they're trying so hard.
Yeah, there's nothing there.
They're trying so hard, you know?
The hat was about it.
The hat. And she's got nice jugs like the rest of them do. Okay, well, they all have nice boobs. Next. Do you have anything else?
Right.
It just didn't fit. They were trying so hard, and she just – there was nothing for her. So let's move on.
course you had to play that.
I didn't know you added elevator music to...
It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Not elevator music.
Oh, I don't watch that show. Worthless. Is it good?
Is it good? All right, here we go. What's next?
I hate Danny DeVito. All right. Next up, we have...
You should have him tag along. You have a tag partner for Armento on all these trips.
They look alike.
It's the hair.
Yeah, it is the hair. All right. Big return here. This is a big match because this was supposed to be a big match. This
Does
is
Armento
another...
listen to these?
Huh?
Does Armento listen to these?
I think sometimes he does.
Okay.
I don't think he cares. It's better than being ignored.
I don't think he cares. I'm just curious.
Oh. Well, he's like Rotella. He's better than being ignored. Now I have this vision of where to settle the score when Danny DeVito is there and you got Armento walking up behind him. That's the vision in my head. I got to get rid of it. All right. This was supposed to be another big match. But unlike the other ones, this pinch hit duty had nothing to do with liver enzymes, but an actual injury. Because the animal has returned, as this is Batista's first pay-per-view match since the tag. With him and Ray against Big Show and Kane back at Armageddon 05. Tell us how we got... we know about the injury, JR, but we know who injured him. But why isn't he facing that guy here?
Grey Goose. Grey Goose.
I like the Muppet one better, but that's okay.
After also having been on the sidelines with a major injury, Batista made his long-awaited return to SmackDown on July 7th, calling out the man who had put him on the shelf, Mark Henry. Henry answered the call, and Batista got the best of him with some help from the ring steps and a chair. The next week, it was announced that the two would face off in a number one contenders match at the Bash. Teddy warned the two men not to touch each other during the contract signing, or else they'd lose their spot. The next night on Saturday's main event, Batista teamed with Lashley and Ray to wrestle Henry, Finlay, and Booker during a bout. Henry messed up his patella, his rotella, and literally splitting it in two. It was revealed that he would be sidelined to rehab the injury, knocking him out of the match. On 7/21, Batista issued an open challenge, and Mr. Kennedy answered it, offering to face Batista instead. This card was just doomed from the start. Between the liver enzymes and Henry and everything, I mean, every match has a replacement.
Yeah.
So, Kennedy, and they're big ones, too. Like, these are, you know...
Huge feuds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kennedy had been out of action since December, not noticed, after tearing a back muscle during an overseas tour. Worked off the rust in OVW in May and returned on 6-9, defeating Scotty Tuhati. So, yeah, I mean, all big matches, all big stories, like, affected. Has to be one of the most in history.
Definitely. This many pinch hits? Big time. Big time.
There's not many on...
There was a guy at the Cyclones game last night. I meant to take a picture of him, but I mean, he was. I don't know what letter Rotella's back makes, but this guy's back was. It was almost like an ampersand. I mean, if the two stood together, they could have like maybe made like an arch. I mean, this guy was in bad shape.
I'm looking forward to everything.
In the bill.
Batista back from injury. Big spot for Kennedy. Tough to pick a winner here because, again, two guys that aren't really in position for a loss. Kennedy is in place for Mark Henry. As we mentioned, split his kneecap. Big pop for Batista. Still looks fantastic. Has great presence. We'll see if that magic is still there. Batista attacks Kennedy before he can do his mic work and starts to maul him. Kennedy goes to the eyes, but Batista shrugs him off and slugs him to the floor. Batista beats him around the ring, smashes him with a clothesline back inside. Kennedy tries to play some stalling mind games, but Batista sniffs it out and drills him with a spear, sidesteps a charge, and Kennedy crashes back outside. Kennedy gets busted open on the steps, but he uses the ref as a distraction and kicks Batista in the head and goes right on the attack, choking away. Kennedy's gushing blood as he lays in stiff kicks and starts to work over the rehabbed arm. Kennedy picks up a near fall and goes to an aggressive reverse chinlock into a hammerlock. Crowd rallies Batista as they start to wake up. Batista eventually fights to his feet after a lengthy hold. Batista goes right to the power holds, jamming his shoulder into the gut over and over, slinging Kennedy into the post shoulder first. Batista starts to choke Kennedy with his boot and refuses to break, eventually getting DQ'd, which I thought was very lame. And it was very predictable that they were going to do that because they had to protect both guys. After the match, Batista hits three spinebusters and a Batista bomb. The match is okay. Kennedy showed good aggression. You know, he had a nasty cut, the flowing blood, but he kept going at it. Mm-hmm. And it was great to see Batista back, but he's clearly rusty. It was okay. And the finish was, you know, I don't know. It's too bad, too, that they didn't, I don't know, could they have done, like, a Regal here instead, you know, instead of earlier, and let, like, Batista just murder him and, you know, kind of tie it into Booker? You know, I'm going after the title, so Regal steps in to stop him from getting to Booker eventually, something like that, and just let Batista squash him. Like, this felt, for Batista's big comeback match, this felt like, all right, he's not going to get a win now, you know what I mean? Like, and I get them protecting Kennedy, like, that's perfectly fine, but there had to be another guy that could have slotted in here to help him out.
Yes. I mean, having Kennedy on camera is nice. Point one, great to see Batista back. I think he ignites. He got a crazy pop on Saturday's main event, and he got a great pop here. I mean, he's clearly the face of the brand. So it was good to see him back. Simple. Point two, obviously a harbinger of things to come with Kennedy. You know, another guy who's injury prone, which asks this question, JR. We've had some injuries of guys over the last year. Obviously, Batista, Mark Henry, Kennedy, Orton in 05 got hurt. We had a couple other, you know, injuries. We're going to have another big injury later in beginning of 07. And people thought this was a problem in the last year, now, modern day. Were they wrestling too hard? Were they going too hard? Was the pedal to the metal too, you know, far down? Did it seem like there was an overabundance of injuries?
No, I think it's a heavy steroid time. And it's just muscle tear. They're all muscle tears.
Yeah.
Besides the enzymes, which who knows what. But Batista, muscle tear. Kennedy, muscle tear. Wasn't Orton, was he a muscle tear?
Was he a muscle tear? Yeah, I think he was.
I mean,
yeah.
Henry, it was Orton neck. I forget which one that was, but.
And then Henry, I mean, knees.
Well, no, Orton's neck was 05, yeah, suspensions, maybe not. But yeah, Henry was, I mean, that was fluky. But, yeah. I mean, you know.
Okay.
But I think that's a big part of it. If you look at the injuries from this time, a lot of them were muscle related, muscle pulls, tears, ruptures. Like you know,
like. Yeah, tendons and stuff. Okay.
Right.
And point three, and this may come up now. When we get to
can
our
you hear
main
the fireworks,
event.
By the way, because they're really going off now.
They're going off here too. I can't tell whether they're mine or yours. So they're blowing off like crazy here too. Point three. With Batista back, and maybe I'll leave this open-ended till we get to our last match, does that make the last match more predictable?
No. Because I still think you could have went. I think Batista could have fought either guy. With the way, yeah. Ray, the way Ray's been booked.
Okay. All right, well, let's get to it now. So Batista loses. Kennedy's
you
blade,
agree
that
with
was
protecting
gross.
Kennedy?
You had to. You're going to bring a guy back just to do jobs? He didn't even get a chance to get his feet wet in 05 before he got hurt. That's
I think
why
they rushed him into this spot.
Yeah, I do too. I think you could have. I had been. Honestly, why don't you have Finley fight another babyface?
Well, don't forget.
Here's what I would have done. Here's what I would have done.
Yeah, but hang on. Because they found out about this all at different times. Don't forget. So they had to make the Kennedy decision at, you know, around Saturday's main event. And then the liver stuff came after. So just make sure you keep that in mind when you're shuffling things.
Okay. What I would have done was sat back. If the enzyme stuff was happening with all these guys around the time Henry got hurt, which I still think might have been possible, which is why I think they inserted Big Show in all the – here's what I would have done. Given Helms the night off or found another – he could have found another fucking cruiserweight and had an actual cruiserweight title match. I would have had Matt Hardy face Finley and I would have had Regal face Batista. That's what I would have done. And given Kennedy a little more time. Now, you're right. You're right. That's. I mean, it's easy for me to do that when you don't know shit's going on.
No, I think it makes sense. I think Regal getting squashed by Batista makes all the sense in the world, especially when you look at where they were headed with Batista.
Yep. Right.
It makes perfect sense.
That's what I would have done. Right. But again, hindsight's 20/20. It's easier for me to sit here and play, you know, three-card Monty or the shell game when you don't know what's going on from week to day to day with injuries and enzymes and all that. But if it was possible,
it made no sense to put Kennedy in the spot.
No, if it was possible, I would have. You could have found another fucking cruiserweight. There's like nine of them back there. You could have found another cruiserweight for Helms
easily.
I would have put Matt Hardy with Finley because I think that would have been a fun match.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have had Regal here. I would have had Batista threatened Booker backstage, saying, you know, if you win tonight,
right,
you know that's mine. And then he could have, like, you know, bequeathed Regal on him or something.
Right.
And then Regal could have got the tar beat out of him. So that's just my opinion. So there you go. So Kennedy wins by DQ and Batista's all pissed off. I don't know. The whole thing was just the enzymes really fuck shit up. The only thing that it helped was, I guess, Lashley, because it kind of made him a sympathetic face and kind of gave him a little extra baby face juice. But other than that, these liver enzyme things just fucked everything up. One thing it didn't mess up was the main event. And here we are. The world...
be racking up any kind of bill.
Not your bill. Creep. Here we go. Our main event, the World Heavyweight Championship on the line.
Oh, not too many surprises. You have martini, you can get whatever you want. Well, hopefully Plax brings out a gun at a club. We're all done. We're all ready for it. It's a Southern Caribbean crew. Kevin Ali is a motivator.
Is that Muhammad's cousin?
Kevin Ali is a motivator. Kevin Ali. Kevin Ali.
We take what we want, and after we take Lex Luger and the child.
There you go. I feel like I got out of control there for a second.
So, because there was no Triple H.
And after we take Lex Luger and the child, we want the gold, sucker. Hulk Hogan, we're coming for you, nigga.
There we go.
Okay.
I'm going to mesh that into the Rotella thing.
I forgot about that. Kevin Ali.
Dope.
This is an idiot who said Greg Auden for like 7 years.
Yeah, he's Auden, all right.
Fucking moron. Can never say anybody's name right. And then he looks at you like, I thought that was right. And then he's just a dick and he says it wrong just to be a dick. But
because he looks like a dick. On 6/16, Michael Cole... interviewed a very ugly, hairy dick. Interviewed Chavo Guerrero, asking him if he was going to come out of retirement. During the interview, Mark Henry assaulted Chavo and dropped him with two power slams. The next week, Chavo helped Rey Mysterio defeat Henry by DQ by using some classic Guerrero trickery. On 6/30, Chavo told Henry he would not be goaded out of retirement, but Henry started trashing the Guerrero name, including shots at Eddie. Chavo hit the ring, but Henry beat him down and pulverized him until Rey made the save. Henry was able to fight Rey off and continued to beat on Chavo. The next week, King Booker won a battle royal to earn a world title match at the Bash. On 7/14, Rey vanquished Booker's servant William Regal, despite interference from Booker himself. Finally, on 7/21, Rey defeated Booker in a non-title match with an assist from Chavito. So that leads us to our big main event here. And of course, Rey's title reign continues to limp along as Booker's heated back up, rejuvenated again with the King gimmick. Booker's gone full-blown. The robe, the crown, the accent. Queen Charmel hamming it up. Infectious. We get the great entrance as... Booker and Charmel come down on a motorized throne podium. Announced the awesome new theme song is in place, completely engulfed to the gimmick. We get JBL adding to it, buying in and playing along. He gives this crazy soliloquy praising Booker, comparing him to all these kings and gods. It was really awesome, the whole atmosphere. The entrance is super long too. You could tell they were kind of filling time towards the end of the show because they were running a little short. So I mean, his entrance is like, I mean, it's like an Undertaker WrestleMania entrance at this point. It's super, super long. And you got Charmel doing the All Hail King Booker and all that stuff. So good pop for Rey, but time's ticking on his title reign. That's clear. Long stalling before the bell. And it feels like it's, again, more stalling and time killing more than building to a big fight feel. It just feels like they're just eating time. Booker buys into a test of strength, but kicks Rey down and starts to unload. Rey makes a quick comeback until the match resets. Booker cuts down Rey with a back elbow and starts to work the arm. Rey wriggles free and speeds things up, but Booker slows things down with some jabs and some strikes. This time lands a shot to the eye. Booker whiffs on a charge and hits the post. Rey follows with a seated senton off the top to the floor. Booker ducks a springboard and lands a sidekick to regain control, getting a near fall and a hard clothesline. Charmel gets involved a bit, choking Rey before Booker goes to a hammerlock. Booker hits three amigos for some heat and pounds away, but Rey makes a fast comeback with a flurry of kicks for a near fall. Charmel trips up Rey and tries to block the 619, but the referee throws her out. Both men are worn down as Booker grabs a near fall with a nice back suplex. Booker eats boots to the face when he comes off the middle rope. Ray goes with a low dropkick, head scissors, and a springboard crossbody for near falls. Ray gets two off a tornado DDT, but Booker whips Ray into the ref, knocking him to the floor. Ray hits a seated senton, 619 frog splash for the visual pin, but no referee. So King Booker grabs a chair. Ray dodges it and drop kicks it into him. Chavo comes out and then destroys Ray with a disgusting chair shot and a super obvious heel turn. Like one of the least, you know, surprising ones of all time. But at least he struck quick. He didn't do the whole thing where he plays it out and looks back and forth. He just grabbed the chair and smacked him with it. Booker looks confused, but he covers and wins the title. I thought it was actually a damn good match. I mean, even with the ending being kind of shaky, and that's mainly due to Chavo just being so bland and shitty that no one wants to see him. I thought the match itself was really good. Ray's run comes to a thud, but it was pretty much a failure across the board for him, except for a few really good in-ring pay-per-view matches. Otherwise, this has been a real failure. Booker's a well-deserving champion, amazing turnaround since late 05, busted his ass to get over, and his 06 redemption tour for 01 stars continues. We've had RVD and now Booker, two guys that were kind of, you know, left behind in 01 when they were red hot, now getting revitalized here at 06. The Booker gimmick is gold. I thought it made sense to pounce, get the belt on him while he's hot. Ray can move back the card, got his novelty run, and Chavo, whatever, you can fuck off. But what did you give me your points? What did you think of the match? What did you think of Ray's reign? And what did you think of Booker being, you know, given the ball here?
I like the match a lot. I think I applaud Booker for being able to adapt, because with Ray you kind of have to. Point one, Ray's reign was trash, and I don't even think they cared. I just think they wanted it to end. I mean, but if you just watch the pay-per-views in a vacuum, you think, holy shit, wow, this underdog thing really worked. And then you realize he was like 0-12 on SmackDown during right. that stretch.
Yeah, his pay-per-view match has been great. The Mania match, the match with JBL, the match with Sabu, this one, like all his big pay-per-view matches have been really good.
Yeah. So if you watch him in a vacuum, you think, wow, what a great title reign. And then you realize he looked like a total, you know, toolbox on on SmackDown. Point two, Booker's just the man. He earned the right to have a run, you know, after what happened in 03 with Triple H and all that stuff. Pretty bland 04, pretty bland 05. Both saved by, well, 04, at least he had the series with Cena, but it really didn't have that sizzle. And then 05, you know, revitalized with Benoit after the whole, you know, Kurt Angle, I want to bang your wife like an animal. So I agree with you that Booker gets redemption for the last 5 years of trash. Well, his 02 was good. I mean, he definitely should have gotten something in 03, but... in point three, same thing you were saying before. Eddie's dead, and that's a shame, and that's a tragedy. But we don't have to use all of his fucking family members either. Chavo's just a useless toolbox. And you almost say to yourself, yeah, you're relieved he actually ended the Rey's title reign. But at the same time, it's like, you knew even after that little interview, you know, the little backstage piece, you know, an hour and a half earlier, you knew he was going to turn on him. It was pretty fucking evident. You knew he was going to turn on him.
It was so obvious.
So predictable.
The ham-fisted thing in the back, I'm here for you. You know, this whole title reign has been so over the top. Like,
yeah.
Just in your face, beat with a hammer. It was just.
Are we Eddie'd out? I mean, let the guy's legacy.
Well, they're not really talking
shine.
To any. I mean, they are, but they're not. It says no one wants to see Chavo in a main event feud. I don't. I know that now. Now, then, anytime in between,
ever,
forever. Now, then, forever. All of it. I mean, I just don't. I don't. I'm all set. I'm good. Chavo was great in like not 2000. You know what I mean? Like since then,
yeah.
I'm good with him now. You know, he's had great matches here and there. I just don't need another feud with him and Ray over the memory of Eddie Guerrero and his wife, which we'll see. And it's just the whole thing was just.
And he's another one. I mean, he was like busting out of that fucking t-shirt. I mean, for God's sakes. Oh, didn't you learn? Your uncle's dead. Don't you get it? I mean, ridiculous. Utterly ridiculous. The whole thing sucks except for Booker. Honestly. I'm glad at least Booker got the the gift, but he earned it. So, and just Sharmell just saying it over and over, and the guy and the two guys talking over him, over her, while she keeps doing "Oh, hail King Puka!" over and over and over again, while the announcers are trying to like surmise the show and get and go off air. It's just fantastic. Oh, yeah. She's the best. She's the best. And you were talking about time. You know, the show time. When I, you know, when you look at the timeline on the network, usually the average pay-per-view length is somewhere between like 242 and 246. This one was 239.
Yeah, it was short.
So you definitely knew that they were that. I mean, you hack off like 5 minutes of Booker's entrance and you're looking. So obviously the whole show was a mishmash. But having said that, the first, you know, the first half of the show was actually really good. So King Booker is your new world heavyweight champion. And
good on them for taking advantage. Yep. I mean, he's hot. He's over. Let's do it. You know what I mean? Like, let's go. Push him. And
okay, finish point.
I find it funny that, you know, after all those years, it took, like, them breaking him down completely and giving him a very WWE gimmick. And he was awesome in it. Like, it's great that they finally gained the world title. You know what I mean? Like, they finally got that WCW stank off him. You know what I mean? Like, and now, okay, he's the WWE gimmick. He took to it. Now it's time to give him the belt. You know, like, 5 years after he was, like, his hottest. But it was funny to me that they finally did it. But he earned it. I mean, we've talked about him more than maybe anyone over the last 5 months of SmackDown pay-per-views. I mean, just, you know, how much he's grown ever since, you know, ever since the angle stuff, but really with the Benoit best of seven shit that they did, you know, the fall into the spring, and he took his lumps with the Boogeyman stuff, and ever since then, he's really worked his ass off. And, you know, he's been great as a heel. Sharmell's been great, the whole thing, the whole package, and they went with it. They ran with it. So he was really well-deserving of this title reign.
Absolutely.
And it was a really good match. He hasn't had a ton of outside of, like, you know, with guys like Benoit. So it was good to see him have a great match here.
Exactly. And it's obvious. Clearly, we're leading into, you know, Booker and Batista. And I was looking forward to it. I was looking forward to it back then, and I'm looking forward to watching it again now, because you have two guys who, you know, they're unique kind of workers. Obviously, Batista, big power guy, obviously. And, you know, Booker's kind of a hybrid guy, too. I mean, he does some high-flying stuff. He could strike. He's a big striker. Not really a power guy, but I was fascinated to see what kind of matches we were going to get out of the two of them. Mm. So I'm because obviously we know it's coming. It's obviously leading towards Booker Batista. And, you know, Ray will get his one token SmackDown rematch, and then he's done. So I don't think we'll have to see that again. And I know we kind of slammed Ray a lot, but, and, you know, his hand-fisted, you know, forced shit notwithstanding, he wasn't done any favors in this fucking title reign either. So, I mean,
right. Oh, no, definitely.
I mean, it's a shame, but at the same time, obviously the smart wrestling fan realizes if Eddie wasn't dead, he never would have sniffed that belt in his entire life. So,
well, they did it. It's done and needed to end. And I'm glad they made a count by giving it to, you know, a guy in Booker who has been working hard, deserved it, can give it a go here and, you know, see what he can do as a heel champ. And,
yep.
If you can have a good run, we'll talk.
So there you go. So King Booker is your new world heavyweight champion. And that is your Great American Bash 2006. Pretty much a kind of a half pay-per-view. You could probably watch the first like hour and...
Yeah, but even the main event was good. It's really just that little, you know, nonsense in the middle that dragged it down. I mean, the first three were really good. And then you hit a wall with the Punjabi prison in the women's match and Batista Kennedy, but then it picks back up for the main event. So I don't think it's as bad. And,
no.
You know, I think it's remembered for the liver stuff and that it was ravaged, and it was. But like, and I don't think that hurt the quality too much. You know,
right.
Like Batista Mark Henry probably wasn't going to be much better than Batista Kennedy. You know, I don't think, as good as great as Super Crazy is, I don't know if that him and Helms is better than Hardy Helms. And, you know, Finley Regal was really good, and Khali Taker probably would have been worse than Show Taker. So, yeah, I don't know. I think it's, you know, I don't think it was that big of a loss from the enzyme stuff and the injury stuff.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing is, at least logic-wise, I think fans would have forgiven Taker Kali only because it was the feud everybody was looking forward to seeing, I think. But yeah, quality wise, I mean, it would have been horrendous. I mean, let's not kid ourselves. All right, before we exit, we obviously are doing our little scoreboard here of pay-per-view matches for 2006. Now, at the moment, we have in order, these are the four matches we have. In fourth place, Triple H versus Edge versus John Cena from Backlash. In third place, Benoit versus Finlay from Judgment Day. In second place, Edge, Foley, Lita versus Dreamer, Funk, and Beulah from One Night Stand. And number one, John Cena versus RVD from One Night Stand. Do any matches here go into this list? I really like the tag.
I think I'd put that fifth.
Okay.
I'd say we have our top five now.
All right. So there's our top five template. So in fifth place, let me type it here, will be London. London and Kendrick against the Pitbulls as number five on the list of top five matches for 2006 since WrestleMania.
Yeah, I don't think Regal Finlay got to that level.
No.
And Hardy Helms is really good, but short of that. I mean, that's probably a top 10 that we've seen. So.
Okay, now, for our worst match, we have Kane versus, we only have one match, Kane versus Big Show from Backlash.
Well, Kane has to be on there. We should have added that last week.
We didn't talk about that.
That's
so
right
Kane,
after Kane's show. I mean, they were both real bad. Kane, and you could probably throw this women's match third.
Kane versus Kane from Vengeance. And you said, and the bra, and I'll just write bra and panties. Bra and panties match from Great American Bash. Now, where would you rank this show compared to the others? Right now, One Night Stand is first, Judgment Day second, Backlash third, Vengeance fourth. Where would you put this show, do you think?
It's definitely better than Vengeance.
I think you'd have to be fourth. It's not better than Backlash. I don't think.
Let me quickly refresh myself on Backlash. I mean, like, the Backlash main event was really good. I don't know. What else was there? RVD Shelton?
Yeah.
The McMahons and Sean and God.
Oh, God.
No, I think this is better. I'd put this ahead of Backlash.
Okay. So.
The main event of Backlash is better, but I mean, this has four pretty good matches.
Okay,
and
so.
It was quicker, you know? It was, for everything else, and there wasn't a lot of lag time.
Yeah. So, as of right now, number five, Vengeance. Number four, Backlash. Number three, The Great American Bash. Number two, Judgment Day. And the best pay-per-view of the storyline year is still One Night Stand. So we'll see if anything between now and then eclipses that. I'm not sure. Maybe the next one, which will be our next Vintage Vault, JR. Which, of course, will be SummerSlam from Beantown. And then the rest of 2006, which is definitely hit or miss. So there you go, folks. Gab 06.
Yep, so we'll be back next week with SummerSlam at some point. Monday, Tuesday, somewhere in there. We're not sure yet, but we'll definitely be there. Mm-hmm. And, of course, like I said, later this week, new clotheslines and headlines. And then next week we'll have this. We'll have a main event back as well.
Yes.
So be sure to check out everything, all those iTunes feeds like we mentioned. Be sure to check out the GoFundMe we discussed earlier as well. PlayStation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. So for Scott, I'm Justin. We are out. That was the Great Mecha Bash. We'll talk to you next week. SummerSlam. Until then, take care. We'll see if I see D'Amato like six more times before then.
How about the Freebird rule of hair pieces between Armento, DeVito, and Rotella?
Yeah, get whatever you want.
Six-man tag team Rogaine champions. Doesn't mean
again.
Yeah.